back when I was a law student there and I was volunteering at City Hall, I did see a presentation from the plastics industry that basically said that we have to stop this now. that was almost 15 years ago. And they were saying, you know, once people start getting comfortable with regulating plastic, like our industry is doomed.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
I feel like most of us know on some level that recycling is important, right? But how does it work? And why is it important? And are we even doing a good job at it? And how much is plastic an impediment to a brighter future? To answer those questions, I wanted to turn to Jenny Romer. She's a lawyer, a sustainability expert, and author of Can I Recycle This? An Illustrated Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. I wanted to speak to Jenny since she has more than a decade of experience as an attorney and sustainability consultant fighting for effective legislation on waste reduction and single-use plastics. Her knowledge is sought out by legislators routinely, as well as environmental nonprofits and businesses across the U.S., and her work and expertise has been featured in National Geographic, The New York Times, Politico, among other outlets. Jenny, welcome to Future Proof.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask you, in your own words, who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
So I'm Jenny Romer. I'm a legal associate with the Surfrider Foundation's Plastic Pollution Initiative, and I'm the author of Can I Recycle This? I am known kind of as the national expert on plastic bag law policy. And I've really, in the last few years, been taking on plastics issue and recycling, waste reduction much more broadly.
And I think it's an interesting thing because it's one of those things that I think if you speak to most people, they're broadly supportive of. I mean, who says, I am very pro-waste. And then when it comes down to it, a lot of people just have difficulty moving in the right direction, or sometimes they might take steps that they think are productive and then actually aren't as productive as they think they might be.
Yeah, I think that most people are pretty supportive of it, and especially of recycling. So my book is called Can I Recycle This? And I should say it's an illustrated book for adults. So it's a very pretty book with watercolor illustrations about how recycling works and how to reduce single-use plastic. But I really, my work primarily is on policy related to plastic and plastic reduction, plastic bans and fees. But I chose to take the angle of recycling with the book because people love recycling. I think people will kind of jokingly introduce themselves as good recyclers. We see a lot of references on TV shows to people who are kind of obsessed with recycling. And so I think that it's something where I wanted to take that kind of slight obsession with some people and really be able to have that be a conversation starter for how that process actually works, because a lot of people don't really have any clue how recycling works, and then talk about why we really need to reduce plastic, in part because so much of it isn't actually recyclable in the first place.
Which is, yeah, I think it's a really great place to start, because I feel like the average person just doesn't really know about how recycling actually works. I mean, what can you tell us more about the process?
Yeah, I'll first say that it's not by accident that we don't know how recycling works. We've been marketed recycling for decades. Plastics industry and other packaged goods industries really just want us to feel comfortable with continuing to use single-use products and not having to worry about it. And so recycling's been marketed as this kind of feel-good thing without a lot of details. And so how it actually works, there are two different types, kind of the commercial and the residential. What we think of mostly is the residential. So the bins usually that you'll have on curbside bins where you put the stuff that you think is recyclable, sort it out from the trash, and then that will go to your city's municipal recycling facility. In New York City, I highlight their system in Sims. Sims Municipal Recycling is a really cool state-of-the-art facility that has all kinds of machinery, like cameras, I like to call them lasers, that can sort out different types of plastic, and magnets and air guns and all kinds of stuff that really can take what you put in the bin and sort it by material and end up with bales, kind of like rectangular hay bales of each material type. So, a bale of plastic PET water bottles, a bale of aluminum soda cans, and then those are sold on the commodities market, and that they're sold to manufacturers to turn that material, that bale, into a new item. But a big problem is that if you, once you do all that, once you have that sorted material, if no one wants to buy it, it just goes to landfill. And so much of the single-use plastic that we're using right now, it falls into the category of the material that no one wants to buy. So it doesn't really have a value on the commodities market. There's some plastic, like those water bottles, that are worth a couple hundred dollars a ton and up to $1,000 a ton for some of the resins. But then other stuff is worth nothing, just has to go to landfill. So that's something I really try to get across in my book, to have people think of recycling as a commodities market and not just a feel-good enterprise.
I think that there are a lot of misconceptions around, you know, like the average person, I feel like, just does not understand everything, or maybe even thinks certain things are recyclable when they're in fact not. I honestly count myself in that, you know, boat where I want to be good, but I feel that society has not made it that easy for us to be good. I mean, what are some of the common misconceptions about recycling you might want to dispel?
Yeah, so we call people who are, we call that wish cycling. So when you're kind of putting something in your bin and you're hoping for the best. And sometimes wish cycling can be unintentional, like you just don't really know the rules. Other times people will know the rules, but still say, well, I really want this to be recyclable. And so put it in their bin anyway. But, you know, my number one take home is to follow your local rules, like look them up. If you live in New York City, if you call 311, they'll send you a little sticker to put on your, or magnet to put on your refrigerator, that shows what that jurisdiction takes or doesn't take. But the kind of the worst things you could do are put things into your bin that actually make recycling or make it harder for the recycling facilities. So a couple of those things, one of them are tanglers. So things like plastic bags and plastic film, or anything that's kind of long, like an extension cord or a hose or even fabric. Those are things that clog up the machinery and make it so that the facility has to shut down and have someone go in and pull out that all that stuff from the cogs of the machinery. So don't try to put tanglers in your bins. People try to recycle plastic bags all the time, but they're not recyclable curbside. You have to bring them into a supermarket. But even then, I don't really trust where they go. There's not much transparency about what happens there. So best to reduce. And then another thing that people try to wish cycle that are particularly bad are rechargeable batteries and electronics. So don't put your electronics into your curbside recycling bin. That can actually cause explosions in the trucks and at recycling facilities. So you need to bring those back to kind of drop-off programs. So be careful with that. Never in the recycling bin.
I knew you couldn't do it, but I didn't know why. And now I'm going to be doubly certain not to ever do that. Because, you know, another thing that I've heard a lot about is this debate of, you know, is plastic evil, or are all plastics created, you know, equal? And I mean, I'm wondering, are compostable and biodegradable plastics a long-term solution? Is that something that's going to make us, you know, a fraction better as a society? Or will that be a major step forward if we can move towards more of that and less of the, you know, single-use plastics?
Well, I would say first, reduce. And then right now, compostable and biodegradable plastics are not working. I don't want to like foreclose any possibility, but right now it's mostly greenwashing. And greenwashing is when something is like claims to be better for the environment, but it's not actually better. And a lot of the time it costs more. So we see so many businesses that are going out of their way to buy, you know, a fork that says biodegradable on it. But that business, you know, maybe if it were like a wooden fork rather than the one that's biodegradable plastic or labeled as biodegradable. And as an attorney, I was involved with lawsuits for customers suing companies with those claims because they were spending more money. And it's actually worse for the environment a lot of the time. And we've seen that when plastic is advertised as biodegradable, people think, oh, like it's better. I can just keep using it. And even some people, according to some surveys, even think that they can litter it and that it'll kind of, you know, go be like a leaf and return to the earth. And that's really not the case. There's some places, like certain commercial composting facilities, that can break down certain types of compostable plastic. But even a lot of those facilities are saying, no, we don't want this. But I don't, like I said, I want to leave some room that we can have some really great advances, but right now it's not working and we shouldn't really be concentrating on that as the answer.
No, for sure. I think it's really interesting, not just to look at the long term of, you know, those types of things, but also like we were talking about single use plastics. And I mean, I'm wondering almost the trajectory of our usage of those things. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing it's not super positive.
No. Right now, we look at plastics in the ocean. At Surf Rider Foundation, we kind of look at this issue through the lens of ocean protection. And right now, we have 11 million metric tons of plastic entering the ocean every year. And if we don't stop, if we don't really slow down our trajectory, we're going to have more plastic than fish in the ocean by 2050. So we're using a whole lot of plastic, and so much of it is single use, and so much of it is escaping into the environment. So it's a huge issue, not to be a downer. But I also see a way forward. And, you know, a big part of that way, I want to see that as source reduction. So using less and reuse, but also reusable systems getting into place. So, you know, it doesn't mean that our economy has to, you know, we don't need to decrease our GDP. We just need to change how we deliver the goods. So people want to, if they want to buy their like bottle of kombucha or something, but they want to buy like what's in the bottle, not necessarily the plastic bottle itself. So figuring out how to deliver the same goods without having to use all the single-use plastic that we're using right now. And same goes for, you know, all that restaurant delivery that so many people have been getting even more now. Yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say, I think that to me is a major, contributor. When you think about COVID and how it might have exacerbated that situation, I can't help but think that probably maybe pushed us in the wrong direction. And then, you know, you kind of hope that consumption habits go back to what they were to some extent, as opposed to staying where they are. But there's a lot of evidence that shows that certain, you know, consumption habits are here to stay, and people just got used to doing more and more DoorDash. So they'll do more and more of it, even if it's a little bit safer to go outside now. And all that waste, I imagine, it, you know, just keeps adding up.
Yeah, I think for that reason, and with all the, you know, the avoidable things that come with it. So all those utensils and condiments and everything that you're getting along with your order. We actually have a bill before City Council in New York and quite a few other places now to make it so that delivery platforms have to make you opt in to say, yes, I want all this stuff versus just getting so much extra stuff in every order. And also looking at, so there are some companies that are now making it easier to have deliveries be in reusable containers. So if you order something from an online platform, being able to opt in to having that delivered to you in a reusable container and then paying, you know, like a couple dollar deposit so that you can return it. So trying to figure out how to get that delivery food happening without just the endless amounts of single-use plastic waste that come along with it. But it's a huge, COVID really changed that landscape even more, where people are doing so much takeout and delivery. And then also even in restaurant dining, the plastics industry really went out of their way with PR and lobbying to try to have single-use plastics like be the thing that everyone should use to avoid any kind of contamination, to avoid spread of COVID. And luckily, we've seen, you know, now that we've had more time and studies have been released, that really isn't the route of transmission. But there was a lot of pushback about food containers, about bags. And so that took a long time to really get past and is something that we're going to be facing going forward, just having to push back and say, no, you should continue to bring your reusable bag. That's not a vector.
I mean, it just strikes me that there are a lot of situations where people are not necessarily doing the right thing. And that's why you need regulation and laws, because people, when left to their own devices, aren't going to do something that's so sustainable or better for their children or grandchildren. I mean, what is the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act and why should Congress pass it?
Oh, thanks for asking. So the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act is comprehensive federal legislation to reduce plastic, to address plastic really throughout its life cycle. I was really involved at Surf Rider Foundation. We were the ones who introduced the two lawmakers who ended up writing the legislation. And so that was really exciting to get lawmakers who really wanted to be champions and kind of giving them ideas to move forward. So the law does a whole lot of things. It really addresses plastic all the way from extraction, putting a moratorium on new plastic production facilities. It has a bag law, a foam foodware ban, national bottle bill, so national bottle deposit. And then it includes extended producer responsibility, which means that producers like manufacturers and brands have to pay for the cost of recycling and waste disposal. Because right now they can make brands and manufacturers will make their packaging out of just basically whatever they want, and regardless of whether it's recyclable or not. And so it's really left to the cities to pay, like the taxpayers, to pay for all that cost of trying to process this stuff that is not recyclable. And so that would really shift that responsibility to the manufacturers. And then the law would also ban the export of low-value plastic waste to developing countries, because we've seen that that's a huge problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it seems that it makes a lot of sense and would potentially set us up to be headed in the direction that's, you know, mutually beneficial for really all of us. And I know that that's part of why you worked on the New York and California plastic bag bans. And I think that sometimes people see these things and they almost, you know, we were talking a little bit about like being negative and pessimistic and hopeless. And hopefully, what has been the net impact of those bans? You know, are you able to see some positive things come out of things like that?
Yeah. And I'm from San Francisco originally, and I was there with when the plastic bag law was happening. I was in law school and I decided to write a law journal article about it. So I started volunteering at City Hall and kind of became the expert on bags. I started my own website, plasticbaglaws.org, because I saw that the plastics industry was super organized and the environmental groups were not very organized around the issue. So I kind of became a repository for info. And so I'm kind of permanently obsessed with bag laws. But also, I really want to make sure that they're working because I've spent so much time on them. So I really look at the effectiveness. And one of my hobbies is just to go to stores where bag laws are in place and stand outside and see what's happening. So, you know, in San Francisco, before the bag law went into effect, there weren't really that many people that were bringing their own bags. It was really kind of dependent on what neighborhood you were in. And but then now when I'm visiting back there, everyone's bringing a bag or at least walking out of the store, like carrying their items. And so I really like, you know, seeing that because it really shows, you know, it's a small thing, but it really shows how that policy works, that people wouldn't go out of their way to do this on their own. But in the face of having to pay, you know, 10 cents or something for a bag, people are like, oh, no, I'll bring my own, or I will, you know, carry this in my hand out of the door. But without that in place, that wasn't happening. So I'd like to go and just witness on the ground what's happening and talk to the cashiers and stuff. And in New York as well. So now I have a whole lot more places to do my observations.
Yeah, no, it is true. There's something great about getting out there in the field and just being able to see how behavior is changing. And you're right, it doesn't look like people, I don't see a lot of frowns on people's faces because of something like this. It's a kind of like when they passed the rules about the soda sizes, right? The Bloomberg thing, I'm forgetting the particulars, but everybody was up in arms and I don't feel that people are thinking about it anymore. It's just, you know, a change that pushes society in one direction or another. So
yeah,
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and we see with plastics in particular, I see it as kind of a gateway behavior. So when people are, you know, start bringing bags and see like, oh, it's not that hard. And especially if there's a bag law in place and they're seeing less bags overall in the environment, then it's kind of a gateway to other things. So to, you know, bringing your own water bottle or bringing your own coffee cup. So going beyond just the bags themselves to reducing and bringing your own other items. And I will say in San Francisco, back when I was a law student there and I was volunteering at City Hall, I did see a presentation from the plastics industry that basically said that we have to stop this now. that was almost 15 years ago. And they were saying, you know, once people start getting comfortable with regulating plastic, like our industry is doomed. And so that made me motivated to really spending so much, a lot of my personal time at that time, really pushing for these laws. And they were right, luckily, that this has started to catch on, go beyond bags to a lot of other items. And now we're talking about, you know, holding producers responsible for recycling and stuff, which we wouldn't be here if we hadn't started just talking about single items like 15 years ago.
Well, and that's why I want to ask you, are consumers really going to ever prioritize waste and the environment over their wallets, let's say? Because if we can get consumers to really care about, I think that people clearly do care about the environment, but also there's this natural competition in the market to give people things at the lowest possible cost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, what's the solution? It seems like one of those, this is one of the problems with capitalism, that it could be its eventual downfall if we don't put the right incentives in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there are definitely some people who will go out of their way. I mean, I'm one of them for the most part. I'll go out of my way to try to, you know, shop at co-ops when I can, buy things in bulk, try to bring my own everything, bring my own things like containers to the restaurant. But I don't expect everyone to be doing that, to go out of their way too much. That's why we do need to have economic incentives. We do need to make it something that's easy. And so what the laws that I'm looking at now, we're really looking at how do we incentivize major brands, manufacturers to deliver their products in a different way. So for example, like with a bottle deposit, a lot of states have bottle deposits. You pay 5 or 10 cents. Those bottles are returned and then they're usually recycled or you know, attempted to be recycled into another bottle. But we could go beyond that. We could go to a refill system where you have beer bottles, you return them to the store, those are washed by the manufacturer, refilled with beer and sold again. So that's something where we just need the infrastructure to have that happen rather than those bottles going off into the recycling system where it isn't, it's far from 100% of whether they're actually turned into another bottle.
And it seems to me I can kind of imagine a world where we incentivize creating that infrastructure instead of incentivizing the waste. So to me, it's, mm-hmm. it would almost be a transfer of wealth from one type of company that is wasting mm-hmm. to another type of company that's providing that type of infrastructure you speak about that's going to create something more sustainable for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what I'm looking at now is figuring out how to make that happen. And I think that some brands are you know, really into the idea. But a lot of the time with industry, they want to maintain the status quo. So that's hard to get past to create new systems. But really focusing on, you know, people still being able to get all of their food and household goods and everything, but also even hopefully making it cheaper. Like looking at some companies, like some startups like Algramo, who are looking at having kind of dispensing machines or bulk that's geared toward people who aren't really going to go to co-ops, but having major brands, being able to get dog food and detergent and that kind of stuff, bring your own container and then saving money by not having to have that packaging. So that's where I want to see us going.
No, I really like that. And maybe in addition to that, since I know I have to let you go in a second, something else uplifting, like we can leave on a positive note. How can we change the trajectory we're on in terms of the waste we're generating, you know, besides obviously what we were just discussing?
One recommendation is to buy my book. If you really want to learn more about how the recycling system works and be able to make a lot of it's not just what to put in the bin and what not, but how to make better decisions as a consumer when you're at the store. So, you know, paying more attention to what's recyclable, what's not, and how to reduce single-use plastic, how to reduce the packaging that you're buying. And then also I get into policy and personal solutions. So the personal solutions, the main one is bring your own everything. Like, you know, start easy with a bag and move on from there. I bring my own utensils when I'm going to a restaurant where I don't think I'm going to get real metal utensils, and then policy solutions. So I really see I'm a lawyer, I'm a policy person. So I see the answer really as pushing forward with policy at the local, state, and national level. So check out Surfrider Foundation. I run their policy on plastics there. So there's plenty of opportunities to get involved.
That's a great note to end on. You know, Jenny, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you. Great combo.
Thanks again to Jenny for making the time. I really think it's an important topic for us to all think about. And it's amazing how much of the oxygen has been, you know, caught up talking about other topics that are equally important, or at least very important. But this is incredibly important since it affects everybody. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.